This week, we're talking life insurance, medical exams, why it matters, what you need to know about it, and the things that they're going to look for. We're going to kind of dive into some of the details. And then we're going to give you 5 tips on how to ace that medical exam. Welcome to the Life Insurance Financial Education Podcast. We're pulling back the curtain here on high cash value life insurance and how it can help you build wealth and achieve your financial goals. I'm your host, James Barber, your Oregon cash flow pro.
My name is Carlo Vaquero with NetWell Finance.
We generated a ton of content when we came up with this topic. There's going to be a link in the description, and you can find all the resources on our website. In fact, there's going to be an extensive list that dives into a lot of the details, things that we're not going to get into on this podcast, way beyond the stuff that we mentioned. So I highly recommend checking that out if you're interested in learning more about the medical exam. First things first, what can clients expect when they have a medical exam?
So I'll talk through my experience with my own medical exams. And on one of them, I had somebody who was probably had some certifications, not a full-on doctor, come to my house for one of the exams. She brought her own scale and took various vitals, asked a number of different questions. It was a relatively straightforward process that didn't take all that long. That was what the situation was for me as a relatively healthy person in my 30s. So that is the summary of the process for what my experience was for one of my medical exams.
I actually recorded one of my medical exams, and it's on my YouTube channel. Somebody could watch it if they're interested in seeing what it actually looks like. It is not exciting stuff, I got to tell you. One thing to note is when we order the medical exams, prior to COVID in 2020, the insurance companies would like almost always order a medical exam. Ever since 2020 and COVID, they've been trying to interact less with clients, exposing the clients less to interactions with other people due to COVID. And so we get a lot of accelerated underwriting happening. And so there's a lot less medical exams. But when we do order a medical exam, it's a third party that provides the medical exam. So we use an independent third party. It's not somebody that works for the insurance company. One of the reasons they do that is to ensure that that third party distance. So it's a neutral party that's coming up with this information. You basically can't question what happens as far as the results and how the insurance company is going to treat it. It basically allows the insurance company to have it be just a regular process with no question as to the validity.
In a sense, it's a bit of an unbiased process since it is their third-party contractor. And that is something that the person who came to my house to do the exam says, that she was just a contractor doing these things, and she does exams for things other than insurance as well. So yeah, that's certainly, I think, part of the process is to have no bias or anything entering into the conversation with how they assess your health. And, you know, also in the end, they might order some labs, which is common as part of this process. And so I think some of the tips that we're going to get into would also relate to elements of how you might approach things to have better, slightly better outcomes, pretty much what you can do in the short term. I mean, obviously, if you just make gigantic lifestyle changes that make your overall health better, that can have impact on your medical exam. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're not going to be telling you how to live your life in a broad sense to change everything in order to pass a life insurance medical exam.
Yeah, so the exam itself is going to entail questions about your health history. That's like one of the biggest aspects of it. There can be a number of different things that get ordered for the medical exam beyond just having all the basic questions asked. You mentioned that they might do a blood test. There could be blood, urine. They're essentially going to be looking for evidence of maybe diabetes. So they're going to probably test your A1C levels. They're going to get your height and your weight. Height and weight is like the number one thing that gets you slotted into a particular health rating. That's the first step. And then after that, it's anything else that has to do with your health that they come up with that puts you in to a particular cohort with everybody else that's kind of a similar health for your age and your sex.
And another thing that is part of the process is you will tend to sign a release for your primary care to release your records in this process. And I think it's another thing to consider is that, you know, you do need to be truthful on all these questionnaires as you approach a medical exam.
Yeah, so the ordering of the medical records is part of the underwriting. We're going to be talking specifically about the underwriting process in a future episode, but essentially the questions that you're going to answer as part of the questionnaire during the medical exam, you're going to want to make sure those match up with your medical history because they will probably be ordering the medical history. When it comes to the insurance company, if they're going to put themselves on the line for potentially millions of dollars in a death benefit, they're going to want to know that they can trust the client that is applying. So they do look to make sure that you're being truthful. And I have seen carriers do a decline if somebody has not been truthful with part of their exam or part of their questionnaire. Now, it's not like you can just be a little bit off. You can be a little bit off. We're talking, you've got to be deceitful. Something that's a material misrepresentation that could lead to a decline in that situation. Not like you thought you had your doctor's visit 6 months ago and it was 8 months ago.
Yeah, I'll say that in the questionnaire, I probably overthought a lot of those things. And I was like, oh, wait, I can't remember. Is my uncle who had something and this or that thing? So because you're going to get into some questions. We're not going to dig too deep into what the questions are, but your family medical history to some degree plays into how they make their assessments as well. Because if you're parents have certain medical things or your siblings that can impact your possible future health. So they do take those types of things into consideration. And like James said, they're not going to like be super sticklers on it. Like it's hard to keep track of all of these things, but I certainly was like trying to make sure that I was getting things right on what conditions various family members might have had.
So just a brief list of some of the things that you're going to want to prepare. You're going to want to have some information on your current health, past medical conditions, current medications, lifestyle habits, overall medical history, your family medical history. Now, this is going to be immediate family members like your mom and your dad and possibly your siblings. And then names and contact information of current and previous doctors, any specific diagnoses, and records of recent medical visits. In addition, you're going to want to have a comprehensive list of any prescribed medication, including the dosages. Some of the questions around these things can be very detailed.
So one of the big, Jim's briefly mentioned some of these things earlier, but a couple of the big things that they're looking for in labs and possibly doing blood samples are your cholesterol levels, possibly your blood sugar levels, and also your liver and kidney functions. These are things that they're looking out for, and they're elements that you can be impacted when you do these labs by what you eat recently. And this is one of those things that we'll get into in our tips is you can have negative impact if you're eating poorly leading up to this exam. So generally speaking, the labs are a big factor for how they'll assess or discover possible concerns, like James mentioned, diabetes, possible heart conditions or future heart conditions. These are some things that they're going to be looking for in the labs as it relates to, you know, blood samples.
And that goes along with the urine samples as well. So they're going to do both of those things, screening for nicotine and other drugs. They're going to look at protein levels as far as urine goes. I encountered this a few times with some of my clients where high protein levels are an indicator of, I think it's poor kidney function. And it's basically a red flag. Sometimes these medical exams can be very helpful in identifying some things that you might have had no idea were going on in your health. So a number of times I've had clients that get exams that they've had to follow up with their doctor on things that they had no idea. And it's a free exam. There's no cost to the clients for getting these types of exams. So depending on the age of the client, there could be some additional tests that get ordered. I haven't had to do this yet. And part of that probably has to do with the big reduction in medical exams ordered after COVID, but they could actually order an EKG or have a treadmill stress test, these are probably going to be with your older clients and possibly clients that are really trying to take on many, many millions of dollars in death benefit. I know I've done, I think, up to $10 million in death benefit, and we've never had to do anything that extensive so far.
So certain circumstances for older clients that might be possible to have some kind of cognitive tests, there's big risks to certain cognitive or degenerative cognitive things. And so that's a big risk that the insurance company is going to want to protect against if you're getting a little bit older. And so they might order some of those, and sometimes you might even have x-rays. So these are not going to be the norm for most people, but there are things that you might run into if you have certain things in your history or various things that the insurance company wants to make sure to protect themselves against possible long-term future issues.
Yeah, and those will probably be pretty rare. I've never had that happen yet. So let's be clear. Most people are not going to be getting this.
And that's the thing, is a lot of this, you may not do any of it. As James mentioned, there's a lot of it, you're going to do the questionnaire, but a lot of the other stuff, they might do accelerated underwriting and you don't have too much of concern. So they might not order some of this stuff, depending on how big your policy is as well. I think that's a big consideration. What is the amount at risk to the insurance company can play a factor in how they approach things. So years ago, when I got my term policy, I never got a medical exam, but it was a small amount of death benefit and it wasn't for life. That's another thing, is when it is a policy that they're expecting you to have for life, I think sometimes they might have some more scrutiny on things because they fully expect to eventually pay out with these permanent life insurance products.
Absolutely. The greater the death benefit, the greater the scrutiny. Now, I know in my medical exams that I've had, they did recommend, the nurse that called me ahead of time to schedule it did recommend fasting. But I've heard other people say that it doesn't matter. I think to be safe, you probably try and schedule something in the morning if you can, so that you can have your overnight fast, normal overnight fast, and then just don't eat before the exam. And as far as the location, you get to choose. Most of the time these days, they'll come right to your house. That's usually the easiest way to do it, but I have had them go to a client's work, and I have had a client just go to the exam center itself.
So one thing that's general health consideration is water intake. I feel as like most people are probably not drinking enough water, and it can even help your diet as well, and your labs, various things, if you have a healthy amount of water intake. So I would say, as you're the days leading up to your exam or your labs, you'll want to make sure that you're keeping track of your water intake, drinking a lot of good water, and also limiting the bad intake stuff like alcohol in the days leading up to your exam. So these are just little things that you can do to possibly improve your blood work. Now, you can't erase a lifetime of all kinds of stuff in this whole process, but it might just get a slightly better thing. And maybe you are borderline. That's another thing to consider. If you think there's a chance that you might be borderline on heart issues, then something like fasting or these different techniques could help to change the outcome just slightly if you pay attention to some of these things.
Yeah, so the reason they generally recommend fasting is to get an accurate cholesterol and glucose level during those tests. So if you have high cholesterol or you have high glucose, you definitely are going to want to be doing the fasting, even if they don't explicitly suggest it when you talk to them. Because different examiners are going to give you different answers. I know a lot of clients, they'll ask, do I need to fast? And you basically are going to get different answers depending on the nurse that you're talking to.
Yes, and I mean, it's definitely a known fact that if you know, eat certain foods, you can spike glucose levels instantly. So like, there's certainly reasons to fast. It's just that whether or not it matters enough on a given exam or a given type of test, that's where differing opinions might be. And so I think to be on the safe side, especially if you think you might be borderline, then it's probably best to go ahead and do some kind of fast the night before.
And they do recommend you get a good night's sleep and avoid strenuous exercise. This might be key for some people. Here's a tip. Because the first hurdle for determining what your health rating is going to be is your height and weight, check with your agent for what the particular carrier you're looking at. What is the weight limit for your height for each particular category? If you're borderline, you might be able to lose a few pounds before you schedule the exam and get bumped up to that slightly better health rating. But you're not going to want to do it by strenuously exercising right before it happens. So if you find out during the initial stages of meeting with your agent where you're getting your illustration, find out what those numbers are. So maybe you give yourself a few weeks, lose a couple of pounds, get inside of that preferred range, and then you don't have to worry about it once you actually do the application and then they order the exam.
And that's a really good call out. There's another thing. When you get to that point where you're getting your height and your weight, the person who was handling things for me, I knew what the lines were for when I was weighed. I didn't think too much of it. Didn't think it was a huge deal. But she didn't care if I emptied my pockets or whatever it was. So when you go and get weighed, if you talk with your agent, know what the target weight is, and it's not the number that comes up on that scale, and you have a whole bunch of stuff in your pockets, you are welcome to go strip down to your skibbies if you need to, and to do that weighing so that you get to where you need to be. The person who's doing that exam is not going to care one way or another, like what you're doing in terms of achieving a certain weight, but it can drastically impact your situation if you knew going into that you're possibly borderline.
Excellent points. The examiner, they don't know what each individual insurance company is going to require to get a particular health rating. So as Carlos said, they don't care. That's not on their list of things to worry about. They're just getting the numbers. A couple other things to consider. Try avoiding alcohol for a couple of days and any non-prescription drug use before the exam. Certainly illegal drug use as well, but you might want to avoid smoking or using other tobacco products right before the exam if you utilize those things. Now, just avoiding smoking for a couple of days before the exam isn't going to get you a non-tobacco rating, but it might keep some of the other things that they test for more in line with what they offer, or let's say standard smoking rating or a preferred smoking rating.
Oh, and certainly as an ex-tobacco user myself, there is short-term impact or quick impact on maybe cutting off tobacco for a week before, you know, things like blood pressure. It's a stimulant. So if you just can do that as a thing for yourself, I mean, obviously that's still, you still want to be truthful. This is, you're going to have a tobacco rating as a tobacco user, but you can pause your tobacco use for the time leading up, and it can pretty quickly improve elements of your health and, you know, elements of how that exam might go.
Next, let's touch on blood pressure management. If you're a client that's at risk of high blood pressure, abnormal numbers that show up or elevated numbers, you might limit your sodium intake prior to your exam, increase potassium, limit alcohol consumption, and reduce your consumption of processed foods. All of these things generally not good for blood pressure.
James had mentioned not doing a strenuous workout the day before, but when you're speaking with your agent and you're starting to try to get on track, doing things, starting an exercise routine that is pretty steady, maybe cutting it off the day before the exam, but that can also help improve your cardiovascular health. And in the long term, you should do that anyway, if you can get into a workout routine. But some of the biggest gains that you can get in working out are in that first few weeks of working out. And so you have some time oftentimes when you start speaking with an agent, you will have some time between getting your initial illustrations and doing the health questionnaire and having that examiner come to you. So getting into a good routine can be helpful for prepping for the exam.
So regular exercise, quitting smoking, reducing alcohol consumption, losing weight, all of these things are good for blood pressure, but they're also good for cholesterol levels and maintaining healthy blood sugar levels. So there's a lot of overlap in all of these things that insurance companies like to mention that you can do better in the medical exam if you just add these as part of your lifestyle, if you just make these as part of like your regular lifestyle.
Now, generally, reducing your cholesterol levels or your bad cholesterol levels is a thing that you want to do in life if you have elevated cholesterol. So reducing your saturated fat intake, possibly supplementing with like omegas, the fatty acids. These are the good fats that can help maintain good cholesterol levels. And increasing your fiber intake is just a generally good thing for most people. A lot of people are probably a bit fiber deficient. So increasing your fiber intake through either foods or supplementing it could also be helpful.
Yeah, and that'll help along with those blood sugar levels too. A lot of good reasons to have high fiber foods and just reduce the sugary beverages, sweets, and processed foods as well. Carbohydrates can really spike those blood sugar levels.
Before we get into the five tips to ace the medical exam, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the different health ratings. Now, each carrier might have different names for a lot of these different things, but they're all going to have something to the effect of what would be a standard rating. And a standard rating is kind of that middle of the road. You're not considered unhealthy. You're not considered super healthy. It is standard. And that's kind of that middle rating. And at the same time, at that same level, you'll also have tobacco ratings.
What I like to say to my clients is there's nothing wrong with a standard rating. That's just average. That just means you're like a normal person. You're not at the upper level and you're not down at the lower level. And standard is good for cash growth. Generally, we prefer the preferred rates if we can get it. It just means a little lower cost of insurance. But a preferred rate means you're in excellent health. Sometimes it's called preferred plus. And then you've got standard plus, which just means you're slightly above average. You're good health. You might have a thing or two that knocks you back down, or maybe it's just your height and weight puts you into that slot.
Then below standard, you have what's called table ratings, and various things are going to sort of automatically trigger a table rating, like diabetes, high cholesterol, obesity, family history. There's various things that could trigger a table rating, and really with a table rating, you might struggle to see cash growth. And that's where you might want to start exploring the possibility of, if your goal is cash growth inside of your life insurance policy, possibly seeing if you can find somebody else to get a life insurance policy on. Because the table ratings, while it can work, it's not as beneficial to have that.
It makes it a lot less efficient for a cash growth design product. I think that's what you're getting at.
Exactly. The cost of insurance is going to impact that cash growth. So it's not to say it's a bad thing. You could still, if you're okay with that, just when looking at the numbers, that's what you have to understand that it's not going to be comparatively as good as if you could just get to that standard rating or higher.
So there's two other situations that could end up be the result. One is they might get denied. You could just get a flat out denial if it seems too risky to the insurance company. And that happens, unfortunately. The other situation is they might just, instead of giving you a table rating, they might just add on a certain cost per thousand. It's a flat rate. I've seen that happen in instances where people engage in risky activities. So like mountain climbing, scuba diving, some of these things that have a bit higher level of risk, even though you might be super healthy. So they're not going to give you a table rating, which might double or triple the cost of the insurance. They might just add a little bit onto the cost per thousand.
So some other things that you might encounter with that would be like skydiving, bungee jumping, mountain biking. Some of these activities can increase the risk to you and to the insurance company. And so that's where they might add some of those extra costs.
So key takeaways: honesty and transparency are important when you're disclosing to the insurance company anything that has to do with your health. Smoking and alcohol can significantly impact exam results and policy terms. Successfully navigating the medical exam does require some understanding of the process, proactive health efforts, and diligent preparation if you want to get the best results possible.
We'll jump into some of the quick tips, just quickly going over this. We've talked through some of these elements, and I'll just lead in with the first tip revolves around that diet. And leading up to the exam, if you can cut out some of those saturated fats, maybe reduce some of your carb intake, control your diet in general, get your water intake right throughout that week or so leading up to the exam, these little tweaks in how you approach your diet leading up to that exam can be helpful. And especially just in case if you're borderline, do that 12-hour fast the night before your medical exam.
Tip number two, ensure you get adequate rest the night before the exam. Avoid that strenuous exercise for 12 to 24 hours prior to, because it can temporarily elevate your pulse and blood pressure, and it might negatively affect some other test results.
Tip number three is prepare your medical history. And if that means gathering maybe your medical records, all of your medications that you might be taking, be prepared to understand a bit of your family history, your parents, your siblings, your sort of immediate family medical history. Some of those things are going to come up in that questionnaire. And making sure you have some of that ready to go can help success in this process.
Tip number four, on the day of the exam, avoid caffeine. Now, if you've scheduled the exam in the morning, try to avoid any type of caffeine in the late afternoon of the day before. It can temporarily increase that blood pressure. And then refrain from alcohol 24 to 48 hours before the exam, because that also affects blood pressure and liver enzyme levels.
Tip number five is avoid nicotine the day before. I even say the week before if you can. I know it's a challenge. You can try to cut off some nicotine leading up to this exam. And avoid non-prescription medications. So these things can have impact on your medical exam. So if you avoid those things the day before, that can be helpful.
That wraps up your five tips. Hopefully these will help you out, along with the rest of the information in this podcast, to help you ace your medical exam. Do you have a call to action for our listeners this week?
It's time for this week's call to action.
Yes, I think one of the things that you should do is, if you can, start making these lifestyle changes. Even if you're not ready to have a conversation with an agent where you're ready to start putting in an application, start making some lifestyle changes to try to get into good health. If you're possibly going to consider getting into a permanent life insurance product for the purpose of cash value growth, if you can start making some lifestyle improvements, get a good workout routine, improvements in your diet, if you can quit tobacco, you know, these are things that can help in this process. And in the long run, they're going to be good for you. So trying to get on a path of a healthy lifestyle is never a bad thing.
And I'll say it is a good idea to start thinking about these things before you start applying, so that you can prepare ahead of time. So if you have anything in your history that you think might potentially be a red flag, you can even get in touch with life insurance agents and start asking them what you might be able to do to help better prepare for that. What might the insurance companies be looking for, or which particular carriers might be amenable to the situation that you find yourself with? There are some carriers that treat tobacco users better than others. There are some that are specializing in diabetics. There are some that specialize in accepting people with higher cholesterol levels. Each carrier kind of has their own little niche in this scenario, and it can be really helpful having that conversation with an agent. Be sure to check out our website for further details on a really comprehensive post with regard to the medical exam and getting into all of this stuff. And then, of course, you can find those five tips as well. Next week, we're going to be bringing you why real estate investors use infinite banking policies. Be sure to join us for that. With that, I'm your host, James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro, licensed for life insurance and annuities across the country.
And my name is Carlo Vaquera with NetWell Finance. You can find me at netwellfinance.com or on YouTube at NetWell Finance. And we'll work with clients across the country as well.
Take care and have a great week.
Thanks for tuning in.